We are in.
Nice. Here we go. How are we doing this evening?
Doing well. Just watching some NBA basketball.
Yes, indeed. Well, this is episode one of Rusty. I am your host tonight, Tyler Morin, and I am joined by my brother, Russell Morin, out of Logan, Utah. And how's the weather up there?
Beautiful. 75 degrees. No wind. Slight breeze. Just a perfect summer night. How about you? You're out in Phoenix, Arizona today. Have you melted yet?
I'm telling you, if I laid myself on the concrete, I would start crackling because it is it's pretty toasty down here, but thank goodness for AC. I mean, you basically just walk from freezer to freezer when you go from room to room down here. It's kind of nice. But anyways, we'll kind of get to the topics at hand. Obviously, we're already in the midst of part four of the Golden State Cleveland series, and unlike Rocky, I just feel like this is kind of a runaway of the favorite. The underdog Cavs don't seem to have a chance in this series. They're already down 0-2, and this is game three. What have been your thoughts so far, Russ, having watched the first two games?
Having watched the first two games, you can just tell that the Cleveland Cavaliers – and the whole state of Ohio had their hearts ripped out at the end of game one. I'm not one to say that the refs blew it, but, I mean, Cleveland definitely had their opportunities to win the game. There was a couple of questionable calls, a couple of questionable missed calls, and just the boneheaded play by J.R. Smith to end game one. And I think that really solidified Cleveland's, or their lack of, perseverance going into game two. I think they just knew that game two, from a psychological standpoint and an emotional standpoint, they just weren't ready. And I predicted Warriors would win by 20 points in game two, and it was pretty close. But I just think psychologically and emotionally how game one ended, I think that just pretty much set the tone for the rest of the series.
I think you're completely right. And Not that J.R. Smith shouldn't shoulder all of the blame, but, I mean, George Hill should have made that free throw. I mean, it shouldn't have even been a case where J.R. Smith had to fumble around and run out the clock like an idiot. But, I mean, I think George Hill's pretty close to 80% free throw shooter, and you got to make those. And I think you're completely right. You look at the impact that had on the series, that changes things when the road team's up 1-0, especially when no one, I don't know one analyst that even gave them one game in the series. I mean, it would have been a colossal beginning to a series if Cleveland could have hung on for that first game. And yeah, I think there was a lot of questionable calls, but still, I look and say, okay, George Hill, you got to make that free throw because you just don't get those type of opportunities to win a game like that, you know?
Absolutely, no doubt. Missed free throw, boneheaded play at the end. I mean, Cleveland had their opportunities. The one thing that social media has, I don't know if it's helped or hurt the outlook on certain players, but I'm sure you've seen that video of LeBron James sitting on the bench before overtime when he asked Ty Lue if they had any timeouts remaining, and Ty Lue said yeah, and then LeBron just pretty much folded, and a lot of people are saying he cried like a baby. But I mean, we have to remember LeBron is human, and he literally put the team on his back in game one, dropped 51, 8-8. And he gets them that close. Like, I don't fault him for getting them there when they knew that with another 5 minutes, they just weren't going to be able to finish it off. Now, at the beginning of game one, if you told the Cleveland starting five that said this game's going to go into overtime and we have 5 minutes to beat this team, can we do it? I think they much would have agreed to that than trying to beat them through 48 minutes. But just the human nature and the fact that LeBron had given so much, he was just completely lost and absent in overtime. And I think that sent a message to the rest of the Cavaliers and a message to Cleveland that he's out of here this summer.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to go back to your comment about LeBron James, I mean, it kind of takes you back to home ec where you're in a group project and you are the one that literally bakes the cake. You put on the frosting and you're asking your other group members to just bring the sprinkles. And they come in that morning and they're like, oh, that was today. I was supposed to bring the sprinkles today. I mean, what more does the guy have to do? He's already baked the cake. You just got to put the sprinkles on top. He doesn't need that much help. He's doing everything. And I agree with you. I don't see any way that LeBron stays in Cleveland, not with the talent they have, not with the cap situation they have. I just don't understand. Could there be this thing of, hey, I want my kids to grow up where I grew up. I can only see that as the only thing that would keep him there. But I think he cares way too much about his legacy. He's already given – he doesn't owe Cleveland anything. He's given them a championship. He's done his part. And I think the river's run through. I don't think there's any more relationship there in Cleveland. Do you see any way that he would stay in Cleveland?
No, there's no way he stays in Cleveland. From what multiple reporters have said and multiple league sources have said, they just say that there is no ideal landing spot for LeBron this summer. The four most likely is Cleveland, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, and Houston. And when it comes to why would he stay in Cleveland, it really is the whole loyal factor. That's why he went back in 2014, because he felt that loyalty. He felt like he felt the hurt of what Cavs fans felt in 2010 when he left. And so the loyalty for LeBron James is just so real, and his affection and love for Cleveland is so real. And that is another thing that sources close inside LeBron's circle say, is that his family will have a huge part in where he goes for his next chapter. And you have to believe that his next stop this summer, that that's going to be his last stop. He's not going anywhere else after he makes this next decision. And as you said, just looking at the cap situation for Cleveland, they are just so far in the hole that there's almost no hope. I mean, they are already right now, their cap space going into the 2018-2019 season, they are $38 million over the salary cap. They already have a payroll of $139 million. And so there is no way that they will be able to, be a player in free agency. Their only tradable asset that they have is that number 8th overall pick in this year's NBA draft. But how much value does the 8th overall pick have? I can certainly tell you it doesn't have enough value to keep LeBron in single-handedly. And so it is just a matter, you're watching the last games of LeBron as a Cavalier in his career.
No, I completely agree. Now before we get into free agency too far, let's talk about a couple more points here on the series. Through two games, who's your finals MVP at this point?
LeBron James. But in more reality, probably have to say Steph Curry. Steph Curry has – you know, it's kind of funny because Steph Curry is one of those guys that he didn't get the love last year. He's a two-time MVP. But when Kevin Durant came over, Kevin Durant definitely took over in the sense of he's the best player on this team. Generally, when you go into an NBA Finals, the team that wins the NBA Finals, generally that best player is the Finals MVP. for obvious reasons. But last year, Kevin Durant, I thought, was single-handedly, no doubt, the MVP. But this year, I think it has to be Steph Curry. There's just a different sense to when Steph Curry is just playing so well, and he's played well in games one and two. It's just so different watching. One thing I think that's so fascinating about watching the Warriors and watching Steph Curry in particular is that, especially in Oracle, when Kevin Durant shoots a three and he makes it, it's just another three. When Klay Thompson shoots a three 4 feet behind the three-point line, it's just another three. But when Steph Curry hits that three ball in the corner that's just nothing but nylon and Oracle goes crazy, they know that the arena is about to erupt. They know that Steph's about to hit four straight threes in 90 seconds. And Steph, I think, just sets such a tempo for the Warriors as a team, and he really is their glue, that when Steph is on, they can't be touched. No one can even pretend to play with them when Steph is on, because I think it's such a psychological advance for the rest of the team.
No, I completely agree. And having obviously been very invested in the Rockets series, I saw the same thing, that Kevin Durant got his 37, 38 points on isolation plays, and I really thought that played into what Houston was doing on defense. And what they didn't want to have happen was really the games that Houston lost, was when Curry would go off in the third quarter, and we know the Warriors have been historically amazing in the third quarter, just outscoring teams by double-digit points on average in the third quarter. And he just puts on these, 16, 17-point quarters that just deflate you. You just have no momentum moving forward. But to your original point, LeBron James is having an amazing playoff run that most people are not aware of. And I do want to put some context to it. So I saw that before Game 3 started, he was within 34 points, which is fairly iconic because he would tie Hakeem Olajuwon for the second most points in a NBA playoff run. And I think he was only going to be another 25 points away from tying Michael Jordan for the most points in a playoff run. But the year that he would tie Hakeem was in 95. And that was a historically amazing playoff run for an individual. And I remember watching Hakeem. I mean, he played David Robinson in the Western Conference Finals and was averaging like 35 to 40 points a night. And I mean, obviously we know LeBron put up 51 in game one, but honestly, is there anything this guy can't do? I mean, with all due respect to Steph Curry, he should be the MVP. And I know I'm a homer for Houston, but he really should be the regular season MVP. He is the best player on the planet. And you take him away and you trade him for James Harden, there's no way the Cavs make it past the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm not even sure they make it past the Pacers in the first round. I mean, he is just that good. But unfortunately, very rarely are they going to award an MVP to a losing team. And unfortunately, I mean, it looks like LeBron's team is going to be on the losing side of this. But any final thoughts on that?
No, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, if you just took LeBron James off of this current Cleveland roster, like, how are they not a lottery team? Like, you can argue that they would be fighting for a lottery spot. And right. What LeBron James has been doing is just so unbelievable. I looked up a key stat for this Warriors-Cavs Episode 4 rematch. And LeBron James, through the 2018 playoffs in his 15th year at the age of 33, throughout this playoffs, before starting game one, his usage percentage was 35.9. His usage percentage was 35.9. That's third behind LeBron James in 2015 and first behind Michael Jordan in 1993. His assist percentage throughout this 2018 playoffs is 46.7. The only other person higher than 41% with assist percentage through NBA playoffs was LeBron James in 2015. His offensive rebounding percentage is 3.6%, which is a little low, but you have to think of everything else he's doing on the court, that he doesn't really prioritize those rebounds because he's doing more and expending more energy on offense. And he's guarding Kevin Durant more on defense. And so his total possession percentage was 37.6%. And that 37.6% is only second to 2015 LeBron James. And so his workload is just absolutely historic. And you're looking at one of the best teams ever assembled in the Golden State Warriors and one of the best players to ever step foot on this earth. And it is just amazing what would happen if LeBron James was able to make this a series. You brought up Hakeem Olajuwon in 1995. And if you go by an all-star is defined by a player that made the all-star team in that current year, I believe off the top of my head that 1995 Houston Rockets champions was the last time that there was only one all-star from that season to be on the winning team, and that was Hakeem Olajuwon. I don't think anyone else on that 1995 Houston Rockets roster was named an all-star that season. And that's the last time that there's only been one all-star on a winning team. And now you look at this Warriors team, they had four all-stars make it to the all-star game this year.
Yeah.
Against and LeBron's that, one.
No, absolutely. And 95, you know, Drexler wasn't an all-star that year, but obviously he was a perennial all-star.
Right.
All-NBA player. So, but 94, he certainly didn't have any all-stars. On that team. We want to thank our sponsors for this episode tonight. This has been brought to you by Hempel's Donuts. And
they don't know they're sponsoring Home of the Orange French and Bigfoot Donut.
The world's best sugar cookies that run out faster than anything else. Anyways, let's move on to our next topic of discussion. So let's talk about free agency, which I know is near and dear to your heart. And as you take a look at the lay of the land, obviously there's a lot of big names that could be changing area codes. And especially, I know your hub is LA. What do you see as LA's strategy going into free agency? What's this going to look like, or how do you see kind of the different options unfolding?
Well, I think something to learn about Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka is that they definitely have multiple plans. They have plan A, plan B, and I'm sure they even have a plan C. And obviously everyone knows what their plan A is. They have, ever since February of 2017, when Magic and Rob took over the reins in Los Angeles, it was evident, and they were very vocal about having two max salary spots for this 2018 free agency class. And so obviously the two names that have been linked to them are LeBron James and Kevin Durant. Excuse me, not Kevin Durant, Paul George. However, Kevin Durant could opt out, but I don't think he could be a free agent.
Yeah.
So I think that's their plan A. The big question with that is, what would they do with Julius Randle? Julius Randle's cap hold is about $12.4 million. And for those that don't understand how the salary cap works in the NBA, when you have a player whose contract comes up and they are a free agent for that summer, they still have that cap hold on them. Which is a percentage of what they accomplished during the regular season. And so you actually have to renounce that player for that cap hold to go away to create more space. And so when you renounce that player, you're actually giving up your bird rights on them. So you're unable to go over the salary cap to re-sign them. And so it's a little tricky, but the plan A for the Los Angeles Lakers, in my opinion, is that they want to get Paul George and LeBron James, and they're going to sell them on basketball now and moving forward the next 5 years in the future. And a lot of people are going to say, well, the Lakers are too young. These young players can't play with LeBron and Paul George. They need more veterans on their team. And that's one thing that I think is really interesting, because the Lakers will be able to use these players as assets to go get other veterans. Something that's really intriguing is that, in theory, the Lakers could sign LeBron James using cap space, sign Paul George using cap space, and trade for Kawhi Leonard. And they could, in theory, have all three of them on their team, and it really wouldn't be that difficult. Other than San Antonio is not going to trade Kawhi at this time. They're not even taking calls. So obviously that's a roadblock. But I think that's plan A for the Lakers, getting LeBron James and Paul George. And everyone on the Lakers is tradable. If they were able to get verbals from LeBron and Paul George, I believe that the Lakers have and will have a trade lined up to shed the salary of Luol Deng, because he's set to make $18 million the next two seasons, each season, so $36 million total. And I believe that they'll have a trade lined up so that they will be able to shed that salary, and then they will be able to sign Julius Randle to a deal, assuming that he hasn't signed an offer sheet somewhere else. And so I think that's their plan A. I think they would love to obviously get LeBron James, Paul George, and re-sign Julius Randle. And a plan B is probably Paul George, re-sign Randle, and then just sign other veterans to one-year deals, kind of like what they did this year with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, kind of overpay for him for 1 year, rent him out, and then just see what happens and just preserve cap space until 2019. They're not going to throw away any money. They've already made moves. They've worked hard to get to this position to have this much cap space. And I think that's their obvious plan A and plan B.
That's really good insight, and appreciate the research on that. Let's play a little game here. I'm gonna throw out some maybe lesser known names. Obviously you've kind of talked about the big ones, but I'm gonna call out some unrestricted free agents. And I want you to say if they're going to stay or go. And we're going to start with Isaiah Thomas, who's actually with your Los Angeles Lakers. Stay or go?
Go.
Tyreke Evans of the Grizzlies.
Stay.
Stay, all right. Honestly, I would not mind seeing him in a Rockets uniform if they strike out on some of the big guys. I think he could be a nice contributor off the bench. Or even if we have to trade Eric Gordon, I wouldn't mind seeing him coming off the bench. Derek Favors.
Stay.
Trevor Ariza.
Stay.
Let's see. Avery Bradley for the Clippers.
Stay.
J.J. Redick of the Sixers.
Go.
Yeah, that one's interesting. I just think people don't realize how integral a part he was of the Sixers last year. I thought he brought a lot of leadership, and obviously they were shooting lights out in the playoffs, and I thought he had a huge role on that team. So that'll be interesting to watch. Let's see. Marcus Smart's restricted agent. Brooke Lopez.
Brooke Lopez is an interesting one. He has said that he's willing to stay in LA and take a pay cut if the Lakers were able to land two of those top tier free agents. So obviously LeBron and Paul George, and what they could do, they could offer him the mid-level exception, which is around $4.5 million. And then the Lakers would still have his bird rights. And then next summer, the Lakers could overpay for him and give him somewhere, give him a contract around $14-16 million annually. If he would agree to the mid-level exception. So I think he's also another candidate that the Lakers strike out with plan A and plan B, that they would sign him to a one-year deal and overpay for him and keep him. He gave some good moments for the Lakers this year, and he enjoyed being in LA, and they enjoyed having him there. And so I think he'll stay in LA whether they get the free agents or whether they don't.
Gotcha. Okay, let's talk about some really big names. I mean, I can't believe people aren't talking more about these guys as unrestricted free agents. Zaza Pachulia.
Jaja Pachulia. He's staying a Warrior. It's the only organization that plays his style of ball.
Seth Curry.
Is he in Dallas?
That's where it's saying he was. He missed the entire 2017-18 with a stress fracture in his leg.
Yeah, I think he might. I think he could stay there.
Okay, probably. Ed Davis of the Blazers.
Go.
And let's see. Let's give you one more. Tony Parker of the Spurs.
He's a free agent this summer, huh?
He is a free agent. Last year, he averaged 7.7 points and 3.5 assists. Got to be some of the lowest of his career.
I just don't know how much more he's got in the tank. I'm going to say he stays.
And I think, you know, Murray has really become a very good player for the Spurs. He's, you know, he had a good year this last year and obviously forced Parker to come off the bench. So that's kind of nice for Pop. And obviously I think the main concern is what's going on with Kawhi, but I think Tony probably stays another year. Otherwise I think he just hangs it up, but that'll be left to be seen. Well, we're just wrapping up here on our first podcast. Any closing words, Rusty?
Yeah, I got a question about you of where some of these top tier free agents are going to go.
Sure.
Where do you think DeMarcus Cousins goes?
Honestly, I got to think that I think he's going to re-sign with the Pelicans. I think people forget how good the Pelicans were towards the end of last year, right before he went down. In fact, they beat the Rockets at home when he got hurt. And I just think they were finally kind of getting in a groove. And obviously, Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday showed that they've got some star power. And I got to believe that there's something going on in New Orleans and they can give him the most money. I think he stays with the Pelicans.
Interesting. I've just heard from different sources that the Pelicans are a little reluctant on offering him the full max, and they might give him like a 3-year deal around like the $85 to $90 million mark. I just wonder if someone – like, I think a Dallas will come in and offer him, like, a 4-year full max, and I think he would go to Dallas and do that.
Sure, yeah. Well, and obviously the priority in New Orleans is Anthony Davis. It's not Cousins. So yeah. I can completely understand that. And they may be saying as well that, hey, you know, Holiday and Davis were able to get us pretty far. We don't need Cousins. You know, we might be overpaying for a center where they've already got Anthony Davis. And I don't know. I think that's left to be seen. But I think there's truth. I don't think there's going to be a shortage of suitors out there for DeMarcus Cousins. His talent level and just where he is in his prime, people are going to definitely pay a premium for that.
Absolutely.
So, well, we're going to wrap up this episode. We'd like to thank our final sponsor, El Commodore, home of the Fat Alberto, the world-famous Fat Alberto. And, Russ, want to thank you for joining today. We appreciate your insights, and we'll see you again next time.
Sounds good. Go Cavs. We'll be right back.